Good afternoon, everyone. PWA Director Jen Adams here, and today I am joined by PWA member Karen Molander. Karen wrote our series for this month and focused on one of the challenges we face as freelancers and working writers, managing clients. In a perfect world, our clients would be a nonstop delight. In the real world, our clients are human beings with all of the quirks, frustrations, and difficulties that entails. So from her time in nursing and as an educator, Karen has had the chance to experience working with all types of clients and partners. At times, there was stress, confusion, pushback, conflict, but Karen was fascinated by the challenges of working with different personalities and repairing relationships so that good work can continue. So now, as she begins her career as a freelance writer, she's found that the lessons of her past career translate very well into our world and offer a way for all of us to find more harmony and prosperity in our client relationships. So Karen, I'm so glad that you could join me today.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm just so glad that you could attend. And, you know, one of the things that PWA members like kind of as we get going is to help us understand you. Like, can you share a little bit about your journey? You know, what were you doing before you became interested in paid writing? What initially attracted you to the profession, and like, how are you transitioning in?
Okay. Well, from an early age, I wanted to do three things with my life. One was be a nurse, one was be a teacher, and the third one was be a writer. And I kind of thought that being a writer was never really going to happen because that equated to starving artist kind of to me. And so I studied nursing in college, and then I started teaching in 2007. And then a few years ago, our hospital education department was reorganized under the marketing department. And that left me kind of confused for a little bit. But then as I thought about it, I realized that it's pretty much the same thing. We are, as educators of adults, are trying to persuade people into changing their behavior and their actions in a specific way to impact patient care. And copywriting is about persuading people to take an action in some way. And about that time, I saw an ad for AWAI and Barefoot Writer. It might have been the, can you write an email like this one? I can't remember for sure. But that just kind of sparked my interest. And so I joined Barefoot Writer, and then I took the six-figure copywriting course. And then I realized I wanted the companion series to go with that, and just pretty much at that point decided I needed to be an Infinity member. But one thing I really liked about the whole idea of copywriting was that you could make a living at it and that it was location independent. Someday when I retire, I want to travel the world. And, you know, I'm not from a wealthy family or anything like that. And so I'll probably need something to support that and, you know, probably never retire. I think Brian Clark calls it I'm retiring, and that just really struck a chord with me. So that's kind of how I have eased into this, and hopefully before too long it'll take over.
Well, because right now you're balancing, right? You're still working some as a writer and some as a health educator.
Yes, I love being a health educator, so a part of me is just hanging on to that. And I feel like it crosses over so much that I just like all kinds of things.
Well, and it's nice when you can combine them and, you know, not really be leaving a toxic situation where you're like, no, I like what I do. Mm-hmm. And this helps me do it in a more enjoyable way and opens up other possibilities.
Yes. I like especially the multiple possibilities. You know, if things get super tight and I lose my job that I love, I can also do these other things. And so having multiple income streams, I think, is a great idea for this day and age that we're living in.
Yes, being that, what is the phrase? Anti-fragile.
Yes, yes, for sure.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I loved about your proposal for this month's series was that it really opened up a space for us to have a conversation that a lot of times kind of gets skipped over in the marketing materials, right? We're like, everything is awesome all the time. But the reality is that, you know, working with other people can be really, really hard. There's, you know, a temptation too, as you get into it, that whenever things get really difficult or you and a client aren't seeing eye to eye, that you would just shut things down and walk away. But from your background, that's really not what you do. So when did you realize that you were more fascinated with like solving problems and fixing relationships? And, you know, how has that impacted your career trajectory?
I've always kind of been a people pleaser and a caretaker, but that's occasionally put me into positions where I felt maybe resentful or like I was being taken advantage of. Mm. And so I can't really say exactly when it started because it was long, long ago, but I realized I needed to look at my relationships and how I could make them healthier for everyone involved. And so it started with my personal relationships, you know, and making sure that I was communicating well with those who I love and deal with on a daily basis. But then as I worked as a nurse in different healthcare organizations, I also saw that the same principles applied in business. Mm. Good communication, setting boundaries, which might be for nurses, especially who are asked to work overtime a whole lot, it might be, okay, I'll only work one overtime shift per month or something like that, mm. you know. And so these principles apply to entrepreneurs, especially in our businesses. We need to set boundaries for, okay, what's my work time? When is it okay for people to contact me? When am I going to set aside time for my family so that I'm not totally sucked into my work? So it's kind of grown over time that I see how these relationships are impacted through every part of your life, whether it's your family or your work or your business.
Yeah. Well, and I also like that you started your series with a focus on listening, because the idea that you can listen your way to a better contract or listen your way to a better relationship. Because sometimes I feel like in today's world, we talk a lot, but we're not hearing each other. And so, too, then when you get into freelancing and you're the boss and you're setting the terms of the relationship, you go looking for advice, and it's to be a tough negotiator, to create these kind of adversarial contracting experiences. So can you talk more about how a different approach, how this like careful listening can unlock a better contract and a better relationship?
Yeah, I think it's human nature to take what's said in, and then rather than digging deeper to see what's really meant by those words, we kind of take that at face value, and then our brain makes assumptions about what that means and what might be behind it. I learned a lot about this from Rebecca Matter, actually, mm-hmm. because she talks often about how a business owner might ask for one thing, but that's not really what they need. And so by asking them what their goals are, what they want to see for their business, we can actually find out more. So I call it active listening, because it's actually listening and then asking questions to gain more information. But by doing that, you know, we can find out, oh, they don't just need this blog post, but they need a whole strategy and a whole content calendar. And we can actually end up improving our business by listening more to what is behind what they're saying, and asking more for that information.
Well, and I think that is really true that, and you know, sometimes it's just an issue of vocabulary. Business owners don't even know how to ask for the thing that they need. They're like, well, other people don't seem to have the challenge that I'm having. I'll get more blogs. And it's like, no, you need a whole content strategy. Like, why are you publishing this? What is it doing for other places? Like, helping kind of guide them to see better results by hearing what's really bothering them. And then having that marketing knowledge to be like, okay, I see the gaping hole in what you're doing here.
Yes.
Well, and two, you know, in contracting, you know, setting that contract up right, and like really doing listening, you know, it just prevents so much disappointment and miscommunication later.
Yes.
And, you know, you touched on setting up boundaries. I've seen it a lot with writers who came from a traditional work background. You get in a very service provider mindset, and you're like in that order taking posture, you know, a kind of thing that the traditional work world does cultivate in you. You know, the customer yes. is always right. You serve whoever comes through the door, you know, you meet the demands of your clients. And so then we have clients that give orders, they make demands at all hours on weekends, you know, texting late at night. I had a client shoot an email through at 3 a.m. last night. They woke up this morning and I'm like, what were you even doing awake? Like, I'm far enough along that like it doesn't put more pressure on me to respond to her. But just, you know, for a lot of newer writers, or you get into these contracts and then you get mad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how dare they email me at this time of day, or, you know, how dare they reach out on a holiday, or, you know. But we created the space for that to happen. So can you talk more about how boundaries help, why it's difficult for people to set up boundaries, to enforce boundaries?
Yeah, I think boundaries are necessary in any relationship. You know, they've gotten a lot of hype, and I think a lot of people view them occasionally as with a negative connotation, but really boundaries are simply setting expectations for what's okay, what's not okay, and then maybe why. I like Brené Brown has a quote about boundaries that I love, and it is clear is kind and unclear is unkind. And so really boundaries are just setting those statements for what's okay and what's not. So for instance, to take your client who emailed you at 3 a.m., you know, as long as you're turning off your notifications for your emails, you know, that might be fine. But then the boundary might be that I'm not going to respond to you until business hours, you know, or that type of thing. And so it's, or I don't take calls after this time of day, or, you know, just
yeah.
those types of things. And if we don't make them clear, people don't know. And so they might not call us at all, because they aren't sure when it's okay to call us, or they might call whenever, because again, they don't know. So setting boundaries as simple as office hours, are a great thing for entrepreneurs to do, that especially as solopreneurs, we don't necessarily yeah. think about. Flexibility is great, but we need to have some method or some structure around what we do with people reaching out, or how people reach out to us, so that they know, and so that we know, and so that no one's getting mad.
Yeah. Well, and living your boundaries too. You know, early in my career, I worked all the time. You know, if somebody emailed me on Friday, I would, of course, work on it over the weekend. Whereas now I'm like, no, I don't work weekends. And I tell people that up front. But it also means that when I get an email for something on Friday afternoon, I can reply and say, I'll be happy to dive into that Monday.
Yes.
Or I don't have to reply because it's like, oh, I don't work weekends and everyone knows. And I do love that Brené Brown quote, because I feel sometimes people get into a mindset of, you know, if I don't say yes to my client, I'm not being easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be difficult to work with. And you're like, no, setting boundaries and giving them clarity is a kindness to them, especially if you're a solopreneur working with other solopreneurs or small businesses. They may not be in the habit of working with a lot of contractors. They don't know mm-hmm. how to deal with you because you're not a vendor, you're not an employee, you're something different.
Yes.
They're like, well, what can I get from you? What can you do? What can you? He's like, okay, this is how it works working with me.
Yes. And I think if we view ourselves as vendors, and we create structure around the way people deal with us, those are boundaries, but they just create clarity for everybody so that we know how to operate within this agreement.
Yes. And I do think it's just so important to have those rules for yourself as well as rules for your client. And you might not even share all of it with your client where you're like, look, I'm not looking at my email after 6 p.m. Maybe right. your client doesn't need to know, but you need to close your email and draw right. that line.
Right. I'm sometimes with people who their email or their telephones are constantly dinging with notifications. Mm. And for me personally, that just drives me crazy, you know, but everybody has to set the boundaries that are comfortable for them or mm-hmm. that allow them to work well. So I certainly couldn't set boundaries for someone else unless it was in how they are relating with me. But at the same time, we all need to be setting some sort of boundaries for what is going to work, what's going to allow us to work, and what's going to allow us to disconnect from work as well. So right. we need that as well.
Well, and it shapes your whole writer's life. Because you're like, later, you're like, I want to travel later. So it's like, you need to go after contracts that allow that flexibility.
Yes.
So.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I also like, you have this excellent exercise later on in the series about making conflict into something that wasn't about you at all. Because, you know, our clients are human. So when you get on a phone with them and they're grouchy and snappy at you, or they're late with a payment, or you sent them an email and you haven't heard from them for like 5 days and they said it was urgent. And, you know, we writers have a tendency to take it very personally. It's something I did. I did something wrong. I didn't turn in the right thing. I didn't say the right thing, you know. And we kind of, or at least I've been known to spiral a little bit.
Yes.
but you had this great perspective shifting activity. So can you talk more about that kind of exercise and how it can help you, you know, protect your client relationship and help you stay calm and function as a freelancer or working writer of any kind?
Yeah, our brains are just, they live on story, right? And so we're constantly creating stories around what's happening in our lives. And, unfortunately, if we don't have all the facts or we have some inaccurate facts, our brains make stories based on those inaccurate facts that might not be true at all. So if we can pull ourselves out of that situation, because our brains then seek to confirm that they're correct. And so if we can pull ourselves out of that story that our brain has made, which is human nature, we all do it, and look at it kind of from a 30,000 foot viewpoint and say, okay, so that's one possibility. It's not absolutely wrong, but it might not be right. And then just try to look at other options for why something might have happened. Things that might not relate to us at all. You know, they had a fight with their significant other this morning, or they were late for work, and, you know, whatever the case might possibly be, there are a million possibilities for why people could be grumpy. Maybe, you know, all of us have been under more stress because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Now there's economic uncertainty, which also leads to stress, and stress just makes us grumpier. And so, if you can look at that and see that there are other potential reasons why someone might be grumpy, it kind of takes away some of that confirmation bias that our brains automatically choose to try to do.
You know, they hate my copy, or they hate what I did, or they did it. It's like, no, they rear-ended someone in the drive-thru this morning and their whole day is
wrecked,
but you don't know.
Right. And there's no reason for them to share that information with you. And so it just comes across as being grumpy and that they're still reeling from that. And so if we can take that 30,000 foot view where we can maybe see all the reasons, even though that's impossible, but it allows us to be a little more objective in how we respond to them. And then even if there is something that they have an issue with in our writing, we can take maybe a little bit more of an objective view on it and evaluate whether, okay, is that really a valid complaint? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And is it something that I need to worry about? Is it something that says something about me personally, or it's just this piece of copy or this situation? And we can take a little bit more objective viewpoint and hopefully then be able to salvage the deal and fix the problem.
Yeah. Rebecca Mays gave a great example a couple weeks back. Well, months, time. I'm losing all of my time. But she was saying, you know, she had initially been having trouble breaking into a new niche, and she felt like her writing wasn't really getting traction, and she was taking it very personally. Maybe I'm not good at this. Maybe I'm not doing this right. Like, in that way that writers tend to identify with their writing, like the words that I have put on the page are somehow me. Instead of like, it's just the blog post that the client asked for. Like, it's not your soul. It's not your self-worth. It's not your, and you know, she went to a conference and saw that more people in the industry had a chattier, more casual tone than she was using. And she's like, oh, I just need to make this little adjustment to the writing and it's fine. I'm still a good writer. I'm still a good person. Like, it's not, it didn't need to be as personal as she was making it. In her self-worth story.
And that's so hard. We automatically go to that worst case scenario sometimes. And really, if we can learn even just little things and grow, see it as a growth option rather than, oh dear, I'm horrible. Maybe I wasn't cut out for this, which I go there too. Sometimes I have to talk myself out of it. You know, it's much, much more helpful if we can take things as a learning experience rather than, oh dear, I'm horrible.
Yeah. That there is no failure, only feedback.
Yes.
And like the more times you get to try something, the more you can see like, oh, okay, I can do this work better, but it doesn't change how I am.
Yes. You're a person of value no matter what.
Yes.
And even if your work needs improvement.
Yes. Well, especially in marketing writing too. It's like, you know, you're writing to specific audiences to try and get them to take action. And sometimes there's just no accounting for people where you're like, I wrote something really good. Why aren't you clicking the link?
Yes.
You know, and so you can choose. You can either be like, what's wrong with me? Or like, what's wrong with this approach? Like, what's wrong with those people? Or like, you know, why aren't they responding to this? What what can be done differently, not
right. How can I tweak things to reach the group that needs to be reached?
Yeah. What's stopping them from hearing what I'm saying to them?
Yes.
And sometimes that can be a really great exercise to just open up new persuasive angles or new content pieces you can pitch to the clients. And
yeah. And it's really hard. So sometimes it might not have anything to do with your writing. And they even, like, say it's an email, they even clicked into your email, but then they're super busy. And so they read the first line and then click out, or, you know, it could be any number of things.
Yeah. I had a conversation with a client. She was like, you know, my whole sales funnel is broken. You know, I just don't understand this. I'm the worst at this. And well, her process, the way she had built it, she had recorded these very lengthy videos. But most of her readers were accessing her emails and stuff on mobile. And I don't know about you, but on my phone, I'll watch a short video. But if I'm going to watch something long, like these were almost an hour, some of them, it's like, I just can't do that on the phone. Or I just had a few minutes to look in email. Like, I'm not getting to the end where she's selling something. And so we moved it so that, you know, people did the emails and then they signed up for a webinar later. And so they could watch it as like a dedicated webinar. And it's like, no, you're not bad at marketing. You just weren't thinking through your user experience. Like, you know, it doesn't have to do with the quality of your message. It's just a little bit of the presentation, like things you can fix.
Yes.
Not things that are irreparably broken about you.
Yes, for sure. For sure.
But say that you've been doing this work. You're listing on contracts, you're setting boundaries, you're managing your own mental state. But your client is just, it's just not working out. So can you talk us through your process for assessing like when the end of the relationship has arrived? Any stories you feel comfortable sharing about ending client relationships, just any advice you can kind of pass on to us?
Most of my experience ending relationships with clients comes from my time as a home health nurse. Hmm. And while I can't share the specific stories, one thing I can definitely tell you is that the relationship should have ended in most cases earlier than it did. And mm-hmm. so I think we often have a tendency to hang on and hang on and hang on. And there are usually warning signs. So if you're feeling exhausted or deflated after your interactions with a specific client, maybe it's time to look at that relationship and see what needs to change. If your family is telling you that you look tired or asking if something's mm-hmm. wrong every day after you've had an interaction with a specific client, then you should take note of that and examine the relationship. It's not always the time to end the relationship, but it's a clue that something needs to change. And then just also remember, ending a client relationship doesn't have to be a traumatic thing, at least not all the time. Mm. Maybe this client just sees the world through a much different lens than you do. And it just takes more energy than it's really worth for you. And so in instances like that, perhaps you could refer them to someone who might think more like they do. But choosing not to work with them, choosing to end the relationship, might actually be a good business decision as well as a good personal decision. For instance, if you're spending tons of time doing constant revisions because what they want isn't how you see things, you might be able to take two clients, you know, from the time that will be freed up from working on theirs.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that fear around it where you're like, you know, if I get rid of this client, you know, if I leave this client, I'll never work again. You know, yes. I feel like there's this ghost from the past that echoes in our head and it goes, you'll never work in this cloud again. And it's like, we live on the internet.
Right.
The town is so big. And that's so true about like a client that requests just endless revisions back and forth. And you get exhausted, you get frustrated, you're down on yourself, your business becomes less profitable because, mm-hmm. you know, they suck up all your time and energy. And it's funny, in times when I've had to end client relationships, sometimes there's so much fear and anxiety leading up to it that after the actual final assignment, it's such a relief. I have so much more energy. I've also found, you know, regardless of my fears, I've always been able to replace a bad client with a better client. You know, one of my first retainer clients, and it was a big deal for me to get a retainer. Like it's one of those writer milestones where you're like, okay, I've gone from one-off projects. Now I have a retainer. Like I'm making it. I'm doing this. And, you know, but I was still early in my career. I didn't really know how to negotiate that contract very well. And I didn't set good boundaries. And so they got a lot of work from me for a very small amount of money. And they were a high drama personality. And we had a, you know, time change differences. And I was exhausted. I was tired. I was very emotional after dealing with this client. And when I finally ended the relationship, you know, I thought I was going to starve to death because I didn't have a retainer client. But I was able to replace the work and I had the energy to do good work after. And as you said, like a couple of months out from ending that relationship, I realized I should have cut that off way earlier.
Yes.
Like just kind of those first signs where you're like, you know, I'm not going to do work over the weekend. You know, please stop asking for Friday, Monday deadlines. It's not going to happen. And they just wouldn't listen. You're like, okay, well, this is a boundary that's consistently broken and it's a problem and we're going to stop working together. They also wanted me to do a lot of writing SEO writing, which I was not at that time trained to do. And I didn't enjoy it. And I spent a lot of time trying to learn it because I thought that a writer should fulfill everything that her client needed instead of saying, you know, blogs and newsletters, advertorials were my strengths at that time. I should have just said, you know, I don't do this kind of writing, period. You need to find someone else.
Yes.
Like, I am not your writing soulmate for this project. Instead of trying to like force myself to fit square peg round hole into that. And just saying like, you need to work with someone else, which is hard when you're feeling that scarcity, but it saves space for something better.
It is hard. And especially when we feel like, you know, I could go learn that. I can go learn that. And I think a part of it may just be growing pains. You don't know what boundaries to set for yourself or for your clients until you've had a little bit of experience. And
that client was really great for that because I had not paid very much attention to learning about contracts or really managing my time or how long it took me to do things or to learn things. And so I was just saying yes to everything without really thinking through my business. And the only way I was going to get better at that was to overcommit and underprice and then get to live how that felt. Be like, I don't like this.
Right, exactly. There are always going to be growing pains. And if we view life as a learning journey, mm-hmm. then hopefully that'll help us deal with those growing pains and those learning pains, because learning's often painful. but if you can also then view it as a learning experience, well, I didn't know that then. And now I know
right.
I don't like this kind of writing. And so I'm not going to accept those kind of assignments. Even if you can do it, what's the point in having a writer's life you don't enjoy?
Right. Like I did social media management for 2 years, and I learned that I don't actually like being on social media that much, yes. Which, considering that it was a primary part of my business, was problematic. But I didn't enjoy having to feel like I needed to be on all the time, like responding to a lot of customer service issues for my clients. I wanted to be doing marketing writing, sales writing. And so but social media had sounded so exciting and so interesting. But until I got into it, I'm like, oh, I didn't know. So it wasn't even that I made a bad decision or that I was a bad person or, you know, I was like, oh, I'm learning.
Yeah. You're learning what works for you in your life. And I think that's really important for people in general, is each of us have different strengths and different weaknesses. And, you know, some weaknesses we can overcome, but there are areas that we just need to realize those aren't ours. Those aren't our strengths. Those aren't where we shine. If we can go to the areas we shine for the majority of our work, at least, then we're going to enjoy life better. Our clients will be happier with our work. And, you know, we'll still have to probably do some of the other stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing's perfect, but we'll have more success, I think, if we go towards the areas we love and make that the majority of our businesses.
Yeah. And that makes it so much easier to just kind of say, okay, this relationship is over. Mm-hmm. I'm moving in a different direction. I want to be doing other things. I want my time to be elsewhere.
And you can present that to your client in a way that makes it about them. You know, you can still help them feel positively about you in the end of that. Hopefully, if you say, you know, this is not my strength. The SEO writing is not my strength. And I think you'll get a much better result if you find a writer who it is their strength. And, you know, if you know somebody, you can give recommendations. If they're super hard to work with, you might not want to.
then you just give websites. Like, here is a website where you can find some other writers.
Right.
So, yeah. And would you say that kind of any of that changes, or any of this, just, you know, client management changes based on whether you're newer to the industry or more experienced, and kind of how might it change?
I definitely think it changes as you get more experienced. You know, it's really hard to give up any client when you're new and when you're hungry, needing to pay rent. And if you're just learning the active listening skills and setting boundary skills, and skills about negotiating conflict, maybe you want to keep a difficult client a little bit more, a little bit longer to practice on. I think it's important for people to think about, what is acceptable behavior. And that might be different for you than it is for me. What am I willing to accept in a client? And then I need to create boundaries around that. And, you know, like we were talking about earlier, we don't always know as brand new copywriters how to make a contract that spells out the things that need to be spelled out. That's one thing I like about AWAI and the Professional Writers Alliance as well. I just downloaded a couple of days ago Bob Bly's copywriter kit that has his contract on there. And that spells out a lot of things that I wouldn't necessarily have thought of. For instance, I think it says, I will do 2 revisions for this, this price, you know, and so you're not stuck endlessly doing revision after revision. Some of that kind of stuff is really important, but a new copywriter might not think about it.
Yes. Yeah. When I started taking deposits, that was a a mind shift for me. Yes. Because, you know, in the work life I'd had before, I'd worked in HR. HR managers don't take deposits.
Right.
We just do the work and the money shows up every 2 weeks. And we're like, oh, it's different in freelancing and being more conscious of cash flow and, you know, managing the life of the project.
Yes. I feel like the business side, at least for me, is more difficult. I have to think about things differently. If I think about myself as a business, then I can think, okay, I need a contract for this. I need to set up payment. Whereas if I'm stuck in that employee mindset, it's like, okay, you'll send me money sometime, you know, and
yeah, whenever you want is fine. Just tell me what to do.
Right. And so it does take a pretty big mind shift, especially for new copywriters.
Yeah. Well, and is there anything that writers should keep in mind around client relationships, kind of the power dynamics of client relationships now that we're entering or we're in, you know, what could potentially be kind of a tough economic climate?
I think having good client relationships is even more important in tough economic times. People want to do work with those who they like and they trust and they feel a connection with. And by listening to clients, spelling out expectations clearly, and then holding yourself and the other person accountable for those things that have been agreed upon, they will learn to trust you and they'll hopefully feel a connection.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like we saw that too in the pandemic days as well. Like the quality of client relationship really mattered, and like taking those extra few seconds to, what did I say, show compassion to care for, to be human with your clients.
Yes.
Just helps, because then you're like, oh, I'm working with friends. I'm working with people who I care about on projects that I care about. And kind of the noise of the world around us is, it's just noise out there. So.
Yes. People want to be heard and to feel like what they have to say matters. So I think listening is a huge part of developing client relationships that will last.
Yeah. And I think too, we're in a great place for what we do, because it's so easy to tie it to desired outcomes.
Yes.
Like, do this and we can get more engagement with the page. We can get more traffic to your website. We can get more people buying. So even though the market shifts, it's like, well, the fundamental levers that we pull to make things happen stay the same.
And that's the beauty of marketing, is even in tough economic times, they need our services. Yeah. Or they need them even more.
Often true. Often true. Yes. Well, and so any other advice for the PWA community around negotiating better contracts, managing client personalities, keeping projects flowing, you know, just based on kind of what we've touched on so far?
I think the biggest additional piece of advice is that learning to deal with clients and building those skills do require a learning process. So if a client interaction goes well, take note of what went well. If it doesn't go so well, take note of what didn't go well and learn from it. It's a skill, just like any other skill. And so it takes practice. Give yourself some grace when things don't go well and then learn from it, but don't keep dwelling on it.
Yeah. Well, in the same way, you know, your first headlines, your first bullet points, your first call to actions probably are not the pinnacle of your skills.
Yes, correct.
You know, practicing the business stuff, practicing the listening skills, practicing boundaries, and be like, oh, okay, this went well, or okay, here's what I'm going to do a little different next time. I think that's so key.
especially in boundaries, I'm always finding, you know, even though I think I set good boundaries, it's like, oh, that situation didn't come to my mind. You know, I never thought of that. And so, you know, you'll learn as you go along. Oh, from here on, I will spell out this boundary as well, or this yes. expectation.
Yes. And sometimes you just have to be in the profession a little longer to just see things to, well, it sounds certain. To see things, to know things. You're like, yes. I've seen things. Well, I have. Like, oh, I never thought a client would try that. Huh.
Right. Exactly. I guess I'll spell that out from now on.
You're like, noted. Noted.
Yes.
Learn and improve. So, you know, on that learn and improve, you know, as you continue to grow your writing career and continue to kind of share your knowledge, what is the best way for interested PWA members to follow you online, to keep in touch, just to kind of keep up with where you're going?
Right now, I think the best place to follow me or get in touch is on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I'm on LinkedIn almost every weekday, so I can answer messages pretty quickly. Eventually, I will have a better web presence, but that's a process.
It is. Well, and you know, I freelanced for 3 years before I ever put a website up. And now with everything with LinkedIn, it's like you can really start with just that.
Yes.
So
I like that. I've changed my profile multiple times now, and eventually I'll get to where I want that to be, but you know, it's just more practice writing.
Yes. Yes. And we, you know, we learn and we see things and we go, oh,
yes.
Yes. Well, Karen, thank you so much for joining me today and, you know, working with other people and kind of doing what we do. It has its ups and downs if we're being truly honest about it, but I feel like it's so much easier to find success when we're honestly facing the human challenges of building a business and sharing proven tips for soothing relationships, for salvaging relationships and better communication, better relationships. It just all helps everything go more smoothly when you're starting out, when you're more established. Mm-hmm. So I hope that everyone listening found something useful to bring back to their own business today.
Me too. Thank you for having me. It's been great to be here and share some of these techniques that I've learned over the years. And I really hope that many people listening found things that they can apply to make their relationships better.
I hope so too. Well, and one final note for PWA members before we go, December is right around the corner. But it doesn't mean that our PWA year is done. In just a few days, we'll be dropping the new newsletter, which is dedicated to one of the most buzzy social media platforms of the moment, which is Twitter. When I booked this series actually months ago, and I didn't realize what Twitter was going to become in the time since, but we have a fantastic case study lined up for you that gives all the step-by-step moves and the real-world data behind growing your audience on that platform, starting from just a really small handful of followers. And Colin Chung, who is our guest expert, he has some marketing tips that are going to be useful both on Twitter and then on any social media platform. Even if you don't really like social media, this is good practical advice that I'm thrilled to be able to bring with you to end the year. So watch for the new newsletter. And until next time, stay safe, stay sane, and keep writing.